Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, it seems like lately, every month, heck, every week, we're seeing some EB5-related crisis. I almost missed the days when we started the show, 160-some, 70-some episodes ago. EB5, this show is more informational, but now it seems like we're reacting to crisis to crisis to crisis. What's going on with this?
Oh, absolutely, Mark. We've actually scheduled and rescheduled over the last couple of weeks podcasts just because something or another is happening. Oh, gosh, Rebecca, let's give everybody a quick recap of the last 3 weeks.
Oh, gosh. So the 3 weeks, as we said, is week to week. But I think first it's important to note, like, one, RIA, the EB-5 Reform and Integrity Act, came in back in March, which kind of disrupted everything and knowing what it is and what's happening. So that happened back in March. And at the same time, that brought in the adjustment of status, concurrent filing. It wasn't a deadline per se, but then at that point, every client wanted to file an adjustment of status application.
Yeah, I can tell you that every law firm was inundated.
Yeah, our summer, I think, was taken over by adjustment of status filing.
We had the whole litigations. We had litigation number one challenging. Well, no, before the litigation, we had USCIS coming in saying that all regional centers are now defunct and trying to have reason with them, and they wouldn't listen. So then we had that litigation.
Yes, yeah, so Mona, that recently got resolved maybe, about 2 weeks ago that we found out.
Well, we did kind of cover that, or we did know that it was going to be resolved once Judge Chhabra had come in for the plaintiffs on that preliminary injunction. But it was only a week and a half, 2 weeks ago that we got the final settlement, which, again, Mark, we're going to be talking about sometime in the future, because there were some fun things in on that settlement, like calls with USCIS every quarter.
Yeah, it almost seems like old news, but it happened, like we said, 2 weeks ago.
That's so 2 weeks ago.
Then, yeah.
And then we got agents' forms, which you came in. And if you remember, one of our last podcasts, Mark, was with Jen from GT. Mm-hmm. When we talked about agent forms and when were we going to get them? Well, we got them. Yeah. We now got them.
I think they're draft forms.
Yes, they're draft forms. The bottom line is that agents will now have to definitely disclose all of their dealings with every project that they're working with.
Exactly. It's crisis after crisis. But
we have one more. We have one more.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Just a week ago, we were again trying to get this out on a podcast. It didn't happen in time. There is yet another litigation going on. Wasted visas, wasted EB-5 visas by USCIS. All of this time during COVID and when they were shut down, they just didn't get round to all the petitioners. And there's about, do you remember how many thousands of visas, Rebecca, which are wasted?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact number, but yeah, it was a tremendous amount of visas that are just sitting there and they're not being used for EB-5. Unfortunately, they were being used incorrectly. So we have that litigation going on, which I think would help the Chinese investors.
Right. They were going into the EB2 category. Yes. So any of our EB2 listeners will perk their ears up that here we have EB5 versus EB2 challenge.
So wasted visas, another crisis. As I was saying, crisis after crisis after crisis. But that's not even the topic of today's show, right? Today we're going to be talking about what's happening with India's backlog.
Again.
Again, right. Okay. You say again, we did cover this topic a number of years ago because, again, we've been doing this show, it seems like forever. But back then, the Indian backlog crisis was a little different than today. Am I correct in that? And if so, explain it to me.
Yes. Yes, it was. And it was back in 2018.
2019 was when the backlog went back to March 2017.
Yes, you're right, Rebecca. Yeah. But it feels like a long time ago.
Yeah.
But at that time, Mark, the crisis was a little compounded because we didn't just have India going into backlog. We had India, we had South Korea, we had Brazil, we had Vietnam, mm-hmm. as well as China. So it seemed like half of the world was going to go into a backlog. And then we had COVID.
Yeah, so it's not as of today. I think everyone needs to be clear that it's going to happen on October 1st. So on October 1st, India will again go into backlog. So there will only be two countries starting in October that will be in backlog, will be China and India. But I think it's also important to note, which we're going to discuss more in the episode, is that it's going into backlog for the unreserved visa category, which I don't know if you want to touch on that now. We're going to discuss it more later, but there are two different categories now that we have to think about moving forward. So this is a bit different from the last backlog, Mona, as we were saying, because we now have different categories. So I think it's important for our listeners to understand that we are in backlog. So there are going to be two countries that are now going to be in backlog starting October 1st. Of 2022, which will be China and India. But it's also important to note that this is going to be under the unreserved visa category because RIA, the Reform and Integrity Act of 2022, brought out three different other set aside visa categories, which are actually current for all countries moving forward.
And we've already been discussing this, I think, was it just only two episodes ago, about what these categories mean. It is confusing. We have a lot of people who keep asking us, well, what does it actually mean? And as we said a couple of episodes ago, I don't think anyone really understands. This is really when people will start understanding, I think, because what is it, Rebecca? In October, the unreserved categories are current.
Yeah, so the three reserve categories, which would be rural areas, high unemployment areas, and infrastructure, which is all under the new rule, those will all be current as moving forward. Unfortunately, we're now looking at investors in two different categories. We have those who filed before RIA was enacted back in March of 2022. And then we're looking at investors who filed thereafter. So anyone who has filed an EB-5 petition after RIA was enacted and can fall into one of those set-aside categories, they're going to be current at this moment. It's going to be those who filed prior to March 2022, especially those who filed back in 2019, who are going to feel this backlog under India.
Yeah, and we were just discussing, Mark, that the cutoff date is really interesting. Do you remember mm-hmm. the craziness of 2019, especially just before the deadline in November 2021? Well, it's not just us. Every law firm, everybody who was doing EB-5 was just inundated and flooded with all of the people who were trying to file before the amount went at that time in under the regulations from 500 to 900. And it was just crazy, crazy, crazy.
Like we said, it's never a dull moment in EB-5, right? I think that's our catchphrase. But yeah, it was interesting because the new cutoff date for India, again, starting October 1st of this year, the final action date, which we know as Chart A, is going back. The cutoff date will be November 8th of 2019, literally just under 2 weeks before that November 21, 2019 deadline.
And if other places were like us, we probably filed 80 cases, Mark. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you, 80 cases in the last week to 2 weeks.
Mm. Yes.
Of that time. But Rebecca, I'm really confused again. You keep talking Chart A and Chart B, mm-hmm. and please remind me, what is it?
Thank you, Mona, for taking that bullet. Because we all know I'm the one confused over here. But thank you, Mona.
No worries. I know. It's a lot.
How about for the benefit of our listener, which may be like me, what's going on?
But just very briefly, so Chart A and Chart B, we're going to find that in the Visa Bulletin, right? Visa Bulletin is put out every month by the Department of State and USCIS because they take a look at the numbers and they predict what next month is going to look like. So are there enough visas available for each country in that category? So we have Chart A, which is the final action date they're going to put out. That's when you can actually get or obtain your permanent residency. So you'll actually get the physical green card. Or they'll put out Chart B, which is the dates for filing, meaning if there's a cutoff date on that, you're able to file an adjustment of status, for instance, or you could file at the consulate to at least get your documents in line. And then when your priority date becomes current under Chart A, you will then be able to get your permanent residency.
Well, see, I told you she knew it. Yeah, but this business of going into backlog right now, Rebecca, it's not as bad as it seems, we were discussing, right? Because isn't India going to get another 700 visas in October?
In October, yes. But I have a feeling because they knew there was an inordinate amount of I-526s that were filed back in 2019. So I have a feeling that they're doing this just to kind of manage visa expectations. And it's what I think we saw back in the earlier time as well. And look, India got out of backlog. Yeah. They became current again. So I think this is here to see, manage your visa expectations, see what's out there. They'll go month by month again to see how can they get rid of this influx of cases that came in during that time. Because remember, after that, we didn't see much after 2019.
Right. And then there's, if I ask anybody what are the reasons for backlogs, it's because USCIS have actually started working again.
Finally.
But yeah. These numbers also don't reflect the amount of people who've withdrawn or been denied recently either.
Yeah, exactly. So remember, we saw EB2 and EB3 actually, they were jumping significantly in the last 2 years. And we had a lot of EB5 investors who filed, who had a pending EB2, EB3 application and ended up getting the green card through those categories. So we're seeing a lot of withdrawals for EB5 applications at this point.
Mm. Well, but what does it mean right now for an Indian investor who really falls under that particular period of time? What can they do or what can they not do?
So there's just two different types. I feel that the ones who have filed in that November 2019, if you have a priority date before November 8th, 2019, you're fine. You go ahead and you'll still get your green card. Between November 8th and December 8th of 2019, at this point, you can file your adjustment of status within the United States. And you could file your consular processing abroad. Unfortunately, for those who filed after December 8th, you will not be able to do so unless you do so September 30th. So you have a deadline right now. I would encourage everyone to file an adjustment of status if you're within the U.S. The other issue is that anyone moving forward with an application, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to file a concurrent filing, meaning you're not going to be able to file your adjustment of status with your EB-5 application after October 1st of 2022.
Unless the visa numbers are fine again by November.
Yes, or unless you apply for an EB-5 petition under one of those set-aside categories, because again, those are current. So I feel that everyone's going to start filing under those categories and we're going to have, you know, everyone's going to be fighting for the front of the line again.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen. It looks as though it has taken some time, though. We've all been so busy trying to get projects out because it's not easy to get projects out with all the new forms and all the new regulations. Mm-hmm. And I know that we are getting rushed like crazy by all of the developers who just want their projects done and out so they can get these investors in.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, now you have to wait. We have to file, you know, we have to kind of file like an exemplar petition first before we can file an investor petition. So it's just a little bit of waiting time. But as soon as, you know, there's rural projects out there, there's the TEA, I think, is going to be a fight. I would suggest clients going for that rural project because I don't think many are going to look into that category. And then I think there's going to be very few infrastructure projects. I mean, that has the least amount of visas.
Yeah. But yeah, we haven't seen any right now.
Yeah, not at all. And it has the least amount of visas, but those two, rural and infrastructure, will probably be the categories to go into because that TEA, high unemployment area set aside, that's going to get eaten up quickly by all the Chinese and Indian investors.
Yeah, it's a return of the Chinese, Mark. We're actually getting so many inquiries from them. One question though, Rebecca. You're going back to Chart A and Chart B. When we're talking about age-out children, does Chart B help that?
No. So unfortunately, USCIS, the Department of State, when they look at, you have to seek to acquire. And when they look at that, you have to do it by a certain date. And they're only going to look at the final action date. They're not looking at Chart B. So even if you file for an adjustment of status under Chart B, we still have to count your child's age when your priority date becomes current. But there's some good news. So if you remember back in the days as well, I feel like, again, there's more and more that keeps happening. USCIS came out with a different process in adjudicating applications. So they did the visa availability process now versus the first in, first out. The longer your petition's pending, the better for you if you have an age-out child or you're concerned about an age-out child, because if your age freezes once you file the I-526 petition, as soon as that's approved, your child's age begins to run again. So if, for instance, India is in a backlog and your child gets stuck in that, luckily enough, they're not going to adjudicate your application right away. They'll wait until your priority date becomes a little more current before they start adjudicating those types of applications.
And the other good news is that there is pressure put there out there to at least try and get some more visas via the dependents category. Here we hear this again, Mark. We've been talking about this mm-hmm. for years and years now. But, you know, it's about time somebody did something about that. And you may recall that what had happened was that under the EB-5 category, although there are 10,000 visas, it's not 10,000 visas which get used up because all the dependents are added to it. So it's really only 3,000 investors and the rest all go to their dependents. And once all that 10,000 visas becomes 10,000 investors, we will shake out a lot more visas.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing as well. As we know, we get 10,000 visas and everyone's aware now that each country has a certain percentage. So you have 7% of the visas that go. So you get about 700 visas per country each fiscal year. When it comes to these set asides, that 7% is also going to matter. So it doesn't mean to say, so one, these set-asides are taking away from that 10,000 visas.
That's a good point. I didn't mm-hmm. think of that, of course.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, because even back in the day when we had 10,000 EB-5s and say 2,500 or 3,000 went to the actual investors, the rest of their families, that was still predominantly China. But it sounds like this other limit's going to cap that out, right, Rebecca?
Yeah, so yeah, because we're going to have less visas now in the unreserved categories, because there are some of the visa numbers are going to go to these set aside categories. So then new investors are going to be able to get those visa numbers versus those who filed pre-RIA. You know, we got to see what visas they're fighting for.
Yeah, what we don't really know is how the State Department is going to mm-hmm. take the visas for the non-TEA categories. Are they just going to fall into some of these set-asides if they don't get utilized? Because right now, people still are really running for TEA areas. Mm-hmm. I don't see too many projects in the non-TEA areas.
Yeah, and we discussed this all in our set-aside podcast that we had just a few weeks ago. I think the concern is that if these set aside categories, they could potentially also get backlogged, right? So the first year, it's understood that any leftover visas after the first fiscal year, they will go to the same visa set aside categories. And then only after the second year, any other remaining visas will then go to the unreserved categories. But I don't know if I'm going to, I don't see any remaining visas being left over.
I smell litigation. Maybe we should bring Ron Plasko back on, Mark. When are you litigating this issue?
Yeah. So like we said, EB-5, you know, I think everyone just has to stay tuned, see how things are moving forward. I think for now, though, investors, especially Indian investors, even Chinese investors, you want to get in the front of line to file for the set aside categories.
Saying that, though, I recommend, and I've spoken to a number of investors recently who've asked me this question, whether they should just jump into rural or not. And I do still keep saying, look, it's the project which matters. Yeah. Don't jump into rural if you don't think the project isn't very good or you don't like the project. And if you're lucky enough to get a good project, which happens to be in a rural area, well, that's wonderful. Yeah. But go for project first, because that's what really matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we'll see far and few rural projects.
Well, we haven't. I think right now we've seen a lot. I think it also is going to matter on whether or not USCIS really accept the definition of rural, because that's yet another thing, you know.
I thought we sorted that out back in 2019.
We have, kind of, but there's going to be those projects which are on the fence, which we're not quite sure whether they're rural or not. And I can just
well,
smell litigation.
See, yeah.
It sounds like litigation in another episode.
Yeah, it's like some of the larger regional centers where they have that project just right outside of that MSA area. And look, if it works, it works. If it falls into the rural category. But I think everyone has to be aware too that we'll be fighting for a rural, we'll be fighting for high unemployment. But again, it's going to be USCIS that make that determination at the end of the day. So we can say, yes, this is a rural project, or this is a high unemployment project, or even an infrastructure. But if USCIS doesn't see it or doesn't agree, your petition is going to end up falling under the unreserved categories.
Why this is so important for developers to understand is that obviously if you're going out to market and you spent lots of money marketing in India and now suddenly word is out that there's a backlog, you will get people backing off and saying, oh, I don't want to wait. I'll find something else. Mm-hmm. You know, we did have that unfortunate episode of 2017 when China went into backlog and suddenly it wasn't a short backlog, it was a long backlog.
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell with India, keeping my spirits up high in that, you know, we'll see this for a couple months and then hopefully they kind of sort it out. But
I agree. Honestly, I agree with that. And we don't have that kind of numbers from India that we've had from China.
From China. But the other thing is the EB2 and EB3 categories. Yeah, we said it jumped the last 2 years. But guess what? October visa bulletin, they're retrogressing. So they're going back. So it's EB5 is still one of the better ways because EB2 and EB3 is just so unreliable, right? You can never know where those visas are coming or going. I still think EB5 is probably still the best for the Indian investor.
Even during COVID, when we didn't have too much EB5 going on, there was still a lot of EB2 filings. Mm-hmm. So that's been consistent over the years. The only time we had a slowdown on EB2 was back in 2008, 2009 during the recession.
Yeah, so I think EB5, I think will end up, even if there is a backlog, it's not going to be, like you said, like the China 7 or 10 plus years. I think you'll see the 1 or 2 years. But like we said, they have the visa availability, the way they're processing the application. So that will help with age out. But supposedly USCIS is supposed to pick up on the adjudication of these applications instead of 2 or 3 years. They're supposed to do it within the year.
Well, that is from next year, from 2023, not necessarily from this year. And I feel like that is the issue that most of the investors really have a problem with, is when are they going to do all their adjudications? Yeah. But the backlog's not stopping developers from going out to finding other countries to market.
Yeah, and that could be a whole new topic. But yeah, we saw China, we saw India, we did see, you know, like Brazil, Vietnam, but there's still a lot more in the world.
The developers have to, right? Especially with this new visa set aside category, they have to broaden their horizons beyond the, I guess, the typical core countries that have been bringing EB5 in all along. Well, enough about developers looking for investors from other countries because of these visa set-asides. Let's get back to the core topic here for this episode. And that's India is headed for this EB5 visa backlog. And Mona, you mentioned earlier that your recommendation to them is to act now, talk to their immigration attorney to get in front of that line, but only if the investment makes sense.
Exactly. Okay? Exactly. So much matters, Mark. It's a much higher amount. We're not talking about $500,000 anymore. It's not even $800,000. By the time they've paid all the legal fees and administrative fees, it's closer to $900,000. That's a lot of money. And I feel that people should not be rushed. They should not be pushed into things. These numbers will keep jumping up and down. It's the investment.
Due diligence, important, right? We can't stress that enough. You want that green card. You want to get in the front of the line. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the project will move forward and get you that green card. You want to make sure the job creation is there. So it's just more than just being able to get in front of the line and getting the green card. It's about making sure it's sustained. You will get it at the end of the day, and then look at your return of capital too.
The interesting thing also is that given this tumultuous world that we are living in, there's still such a demand for coming into the United States. That all never ceases to amaze me.
Well, I agree with you, Mona. I certainly like living here. Mona, Rebecca, thank you so much for your time. I know you have been inundated working with all these clients and investors, and it's been crisis after crisis. But again, thank you for coming on EB5 Investment Voice and giving us these critical updates.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshahlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.